Well, it's Valentine's Day, so I thought it would be worth celebrating, since I'm sure everyone has made Shiva your Valentine, and that you're deeply in love, such deep love that you are one with Shiva, and that you have fulfilled your purpose in being alive. And that you are filling your stores of life energy and of divine love through your connection to Shiva, that is transcendent of all other concerns. So that the reality of pure infinite consciousness is the only reality in which you abide. No longer in any of the finite narratives of the ego mind. That was one reason for coming this evening. Another reason had to do more with current events and the presentation of the narratives of the political world and the let's say the psyops of the deep state as they are presented in the shift of narratives that we see happening. And this week we saw a major transition to the what was always the backup narrative of the UFO invasion. And they shot down a record of, what, 4 UFOs this week. They didn't even used to exist, you see. And now suddenly they've morphed from weather balloons into unknown vehicles that cannot be explained and that still haven't been explained. But I did notice today that they're walking back that narrative, and I think they have concluded that the public is not going to fall for it the way that it's being presented. There's too much information out there about Operation Blue Beam and all of that, and so there's a recognition that they have to go about it a different way. But it puts a different twist to the way that the narrative and the events leading up to the final days will unfold, and what is the nature of the way that they are going to try to organize the blamelessness and the demonization of extraterrestrials, but also the use of that meme and that reality to bring about a new political order. So, but I think it's premature to speak about how it's unfolding until we see how it emerges again, because I think they have recognized that it was done with too much sudden. Dramatic shift of focus, on something that had been marginalized and treated as a subject for conspiracy theorists rather than for Air Force pilots. So I think that this will end up being brought out in a slightly different way. So I'll wait to comment on it until we see how it's being modified. But it does give a sense of the desperation that's going on within certain circles. And the need to accelerate events that they feel, which is relevant to our own acceleration of our transcendence from the matrix into the supreme reality. And we have to float above the illusion and become the UFOs that whose light is seen and transforms the energy field. But then I wanted to speak about another, let's say, event and narrative and theoretical disposition that has been in the news regarding the death of the Pope Benedict the 16th, the retired Pope, because his retirement, of course, was not, as he declared at the time, not based on ill health or on inability to function as Pope. And I think everyone clearly knew that. But his testimony at the time that he resigned was analyzed in a very interesting book that I took off the shelf again and reread by the Italian philosopher Giorgio Agamben. And the title of this very little book is called The Mystery of Evil, Pope Benedict XVI and the End of Days. The book doesn't live up to the title. It doesn't reveal the mystery of evil itself, but it does reveal the state of consciousness of Pope Benedict, which I think is very interesting. Because you remember that in a recent retreat, I was quoting from Paul's second letter to the Thessalonians and referring to the catechon. Remember that one? The one who holds back the Antichrist? Well, in Pope Benedict's writings, it was clear he believed he was the catechon. And that it was his place as the Pope to hold back the Antichrist taking over the church. And then between the lines, and I think very ably analyzed by Agamben, it was very clear that the powers that are behind all of the events that are occurring in regard to pandemic injections, et cetera, lockdowns and masking, et cetera, approached him and made it very clear that if he wanted to have a long, healthy life as the Pope, he would have to follow certain orders and change the church's teachings, dogma, practices in a certain way that would serve the Antichrist. And he couldn't do that. He could not, in good conscience, play that role. And so he had to resign and agree not to speak, at least not to speak too directly and obviously about it. But in his references to this letter, he did make it clear that once he, as catechon, was out of the way, then those forces would indeed take over, not only the church, but that was, of course, his concern. And we have seen that in the next pope who has chosen these changes, including the ending of the Latin Mass and all of the other changes that have taken place and are continuing, were something that he mourned very openly, and recognized that in a certain way, despite the fact that he was very sad about this, he was also overjoyed at the fact that these are the final days, and that if the Antichrist is coming, well, then so is Christ. So is the power of God coming to the world. And his faith was strong enough to recognize that the blessing hidden in the church's disgrace, we could say, is obscuring the grace that is manifestly present for those who have eyes to see. And so, in a way, the mystery of evil is that it serves the good, and that it is always ultimately unable to threaten the will of God, the reign of God, but in fact simply enriches the fabric of the cosmic drama in the sense of testing everyone's faith, everyone's wisdom, clarity, everyone's capacity to recognize the presence of the divinity within, and that this this final test was part of the return to the return of God and the return to God, and to a new beginning beyond the approaching Omega point. And so I thought it would be useful to mention the awareness that he had of the true nature of the events that are unfolding. And as we see, they are unfolding at an accelerated pace now. And those beings who are in a state of belonging to God, in a state of wanting to serve God in these final days, must accelerate our own purification so that no trace of body consciousness remains, and so that the title of the book that we're all reading, Nobody, Son of Nobody, is the identity of every one of us. If you are still a somebody who is a child of a somebody, then you're not yet ready to fully serve God. And so it is the cleansing out of any identity other than the self that is our only task that we must fulfill in order to become instruments of God consciousness and the wisdom and the light and the power of healing and uplifting that comes with that surrender and unification. And so this is the last clear moment before the cataclysmic events become so overwhelming that the consciousness of the ego, if it is still there, will have the luxury of disciplining itself with a sadhana that can bring about the release, because once the real events of destruction are underway, then most people's concern will be with physical survival and not with spiritual transcendence, if we are not already in that state. So I think we are receiving a certain last warning of taking very seriously the nature of where we are in the cycle of time and in relation to God, and not wasting any time in phenomenal plane involvements, but we remain only manifestations of the one eternal presence that underlies all that is. So that's the basic message that I wanted to deliver this evening. And given the number of destructive events that are happening, I'm sure people are aware of the train wreck and explosion in Ohio that is causing massive damage and harm, physical harm and death, that isn't even being really talked about very much. And I think one of the reasons that there are so many of these other diversionary stories in the media is to cover over that, and the earthquakes in Turkey and Syria, and so many other events that are happening that are accelerating the movement into the final vortex that in a way is being obscured by a lot of this. But if we are very clear as to the logic that is involved from that perspective of those who are, let's say, operatives of the destruction side of events, then we will also have clarity on the blissful side of events, the side of that growing angelic presence in the world that must counterbalance the dark forces that are seeming to have hegemony, but do not really possess that. And it's incumbent upon each of us to be free of the limited melodrama of the ego in order to be able to comprehend that clearly as instruments of that supreme intelligence and power that that we serve. So I think that's basically the only message I wanted to relay. But I'm hoping that the effect of the retreat that we have just had, and the focus on the going beyond the concept and beyond narrative is taking hold, because it's only the silence in which the presence of God is felt palpably, and one feels the empowerment and the joy and the relief from the anxieties and concerns of the ego, that will enable one to have the coherence and attunement to the Tao to navigate accurately through these complex situations that we will all face. And that must not be approached with black and white thinking, must not be approached with that light versus dark duality, but one must recognize the underlying non-duality, that is the truth of the situation, and not be deceived by the mind's tendency to judge based on its projections rather than on divine insight. So with that, I'll open the floor if anyone has any questions or comments about any of those subjects or about any other aspects of our sadhana that are burning in the heart. Everyone's beyond questions. It's good. No doubts, no worries, no... Yeah, go to the mic, yeah, please.
I think it's possible that the aliens took offense that destructors of the world to use their good name in order to terrify population, and somebody went met them in the back alley and had a few words and said, "You guys better dial it back." And,
no, because no. They're in charge of the whole operation. They're already in control, so they don't have to. Be concerned. They will simply give the orders as they see fit.
Thank you.
On the idea of going beyond the concept, like, I've been reading a bit of Steiner's work, and he seems to be saying that, like, the intellectual mind is what's sort of new for us, and that's why we're having such a big trouble with it. And, like, looking, and I look to your life, and it has been one of study, like, going deeply into the concept in order to understand it. And so it seems extremely significant that if we're going beyond the concept at that point, and I was just curious if you could expand on it more, like from that lens of, let's say, humanity as a whole.
Well, I do think it's true that Kali Yuga is the time in which the intellectual development of the ego has had its heyday, but that heyday is over, actually. And if you look in the canon of Western philosophy, nearly every philosopher of the 20th century agrees that the last real philosopher was Hegel. And there has been no new philosophy since, and every philosophy that has come since Hegel has been a degradation of Hegelian thinking, like Marxism was one, and Schmitt and the right-wing thinkers were another degraded variant. And we could go on and on. Even Heidegger felt that whatever he had learned from Hegel, but he couldn't sustain it. And he said, metaphysics is over. It's finished. And pretty much they all agreed. Derrida said, now it's just time to deconstruct all the concepts. You cannot sustain any concept any longer or any grand narrative, right? That's the whole point of postmodernism, right? If you read, who was it? The other French, his name escapes my mind. I'm sure it'll come back in a minute. But this is a general postmodernist, post-structuralist viewpoint that the day of the concept is, in fact, over. And we have to learn to think again, not with concepts, but with an intuitive clarity as to what is real now that cannot be captured by concepts. And so now, in a way, what they are all really saying is we have to return to the wisdom of the heart, because the mind has done whatever it could do, and it's exhausted and finished. Its final, loss of coherence happened with Immanuel Kant, who for the first time said metaphysics is a failure because we cannot know God. God is the thing in itself, right? We can only know our own projections and beliefs. And we should keep the belief in God, but we can never know whether there is really a God or not. Well, Hegel said, no, that is not the case. And he went about disproving Kant in a very, very beautiful way. But there could be nothing beyond what he accomplished. And his achievement of dialectical reasoning, if you follow it, because it's based on negation, and then the negation of negation, it is a complete wiping out of all of the theses, the original conceptualizations that any philosopher would begin with, and recognizing that whatever belief you have is actually self-contradictory, if you analyze it clearly. And that only through negating whatever you're thinking will some of the light of true clarity come in. But even that then has to be negated because it cannot even come into an I. There has to be a negation of the I that thinks it understands, even at that level of intuition, and a return to the absolute that is not expressed either in concepts or as a person, but as simply the field of awareness. So in a way, they were all pointing to non-duality, even though they didn't all use that term. But they recognized that the whole project from, Socrates or Parmenides to Hegel was done. And now we were in a final deflationary period in which, as we see, there's a dumbing down of the educational systems and the intelligence of people and a loss of that thinking capacity and a fall into the imaginary. So what we had gained has been used up. The merit of having a sattvic ego that could think clearly has now fallen into such a rajasic and then a tamasic state that the only use of intelligence for the last, probably the last at least 60 years, has been to create weapons of mass destruction, not to create some new culture and renaissance. No, it's all been about destruction and control and surveillance and, as we see, depopulation. So it is a self-destructive process that is underway. And the only healing of that is to stop trying to think from the ego and return to the soul as a higher vehicle, and the soul in turn from the source of its own capacity for life after life on this wheel of time, to return to the eternal nature that we have lost. And only that will then give us true knowledge again.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I hope that's expanded enough.
Indeed. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. You want to go to the mic?
Just wondering if you don't maybe think that like people like Donald Hoffman and Bernardo Kastrup are kind of touching in and kind of getting back to realizing through philosophy and reasoning, and I can't remember what Donald Hoffman is, but he's some kind of scientist who has proved that we don't see reality. There's no way we're seeing reality.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. But then he still holds on to evolutionary belief, and he holds on still to the belief that we exist as separate individual beings. So he partially gets it by saying we don't perceive reality as it is, but he believes that we do exist as we think we do as separate individuals. So he's not entirely out of the matrix.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Bernardo Kastrup, because he's saying that we are all actually the same if we let go of our story.
Yes, right? Kastrup has a very different view from Hoffman. They're not the same, expressing the same philosophy.
Yeah, they get along well, though, when they talk.
Yeah, they do, because they're both in the concept. Huh. The problem is that's not a high enough state. We can theorize about the cosmic mind, but we are still separated from it if we are talking about it within a conceptual frame of reference. The question is, how do you realize that that cosmic mind is yourself and not an other that is dreaming you into being? It's that shift that has to be made.
Right. I think Bernardo is getting there. He says that's where he wants to go, I think.
Yeah, I agree. That's where he wants to go. Let's see if he gets
there. Let's see if he gets there. Yeah, he's kind of wrong on some things, like Ukraine and politics and stuff. He doesn't quite get that. But the other thing I always wanted to ask you is, what do you think they're doing at CERN? You think it's something, you know, like, do you have any opinions on that?
Yeah, I think they're attracting antimatter, and they are trying to make use of it, but they will discover that it's not something that they can control. But I have a feeling that because of the energy shortage in Europe now, they may have to actually shut down, because it uses a whole country's worth of electricity to keep this collider going. And I think that they may no longer have that that freedom of wasting their power on these experiments.
Yeah, I also have heard from some conspiracy, but maybe real people thinking that there's a lot of really dark stuff going on there, like the symbols that they're using and the...
No, actually, I think the symbols are good. They're using Shiva as their main symbol. And indeed, Shiva is the destroyer, but he's the destroyer of the dark forces. So not to worry. Shiva's in control. I think it's wrong to believe that the dark forces have any power. And once you fall into that duality, you can't avoid fear. And then you become subject to those very forces that you're projecting. So it's not real. Nothing that happens in the phenomenal plane is real. It's of entertainment value only. Mm. So be with the self that is beyond the cosmos.
I find it very interesting, too, that you're one of the very, very few teachers who actually looks at, like, you know, or talks about the dark side. Why do you think nobody else wants to look at it? Or what's going on there?
Well, I think it's clear that what happened to Pope Benedict can happen to anyone, you see, who's in a position of power and influence may just get visited by someone who makes them an offer they can't refuse.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shinya, I have a question for you about Sophia. You've been talking, or you in the past have talked about philosophy being related to Philo Sophia, the love of Sophia, the goddess of wisdom. And then in the retreat, you were also speaking about her as, I don't know, it felt like more like the soul of every being in a way as representing that receptivity. And I feel like I want to know more about what she represents internally and how to relate to that.
She's your capacity for love, you see. But she's the mirror that captures the light of God because she's receptive. And her love for God is so total that she shines it out, and she attracts those who are in the position of Son and Holy Spirit to bring their awareness to unite with the light. And so she brings together these apparently disparate forces of light and awareness and creates the realization that they are one, not two. So that which is happening within you that unifies your consciousness, your capacity to think and to feel with the internal energy of life and of light and of love will bring about a complete dissociation from the ego and a death of the ego identity, and you become the mirror of God. You become the one who is shining with that light and ultimately not different from it and expressing that light as your own awareness and as your own function to spread the light. And to offer it to all freely with great joy and great love. And so this is the function of Sophia within everyone.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, that light's really bright. Today I did the big loop walking around this incredible piece of heaven that you have here. And I don't know if it was because after being here a week I've slowed down enough to feel it, or if there's been a significant jump in frequency. But I just felt it coming from the land in a really beautiful way. It just felt really heavenly. So thank you again for taking the chance and letting me come here. And I just wondered if you would have the answer to that question. And if it's something that you experience as well as time goes on, as in, if any of us are feeling more of a connection and a higher frequency, does it affect everyone and does it affect you?
Well, it affects the entire field. And so anyone who identifies as a being within that field will be certainly affected. Ultimately, we are the entirety of the field. So we are more sharing the causality rather than the effect. But so long as you're identified as a person in a world, then you will feel that effect, but you will also be transmitting it and bringing about an augmentation of that vibrational frequency. So in a way, that's very good karma. And indeed, the more that you are in a state of freedom and of internal peace and acceptance and wholeness and love, the more that that energy of your real self will naturally emanate, and it will bring about the purification that enables you to be in that state always, no matter where the body might travel.
I also wanted to comment on the program that you have here. I'm really enjoying the... I'm having lots of trouble sleeping, but and I'm working on switching that around. But I'm enjoying the pace of the way the program is set up. I think it's very well done, and even with my own difficulties, which are fairly significant, the challenges, still managing to gain and experience much benefit.
So, oh, good.
Thank
you. I'm very glad. Thank you very much. So that's good feedback for the team.
Hi, Shunya. You mentioned the right way to perform sadhana, I believe, or the correct practice of sadhana. And my question was about this, as where there's time, mostly during the afternoons, where I kind of wonder what's the best sort of approach. And I've tried many different things, from just meditating to then meditating and reading. And what I find that's helping now is kind of reading about poetry and writing about poetry and just putting things on paper and trying to create something, which sometimes can get the energy moving. Other times it doesn't really work. And then there's, I guess a sense of stuckness. And I've just been trying this for a couple of days now, so it's not something, perhaps it needs more time or... But yeah, I guess it's mostly a question of what you think about this, let's say, using those practices, because I know you said before that the time for sublimation is kind of over. And so then I wonder if a more serious approach is...
No, it's not over. It's to be completed, the sublimation from ego to soul and from soul to supreme self. Mm-hmm. So... the real question is, are you a somebody or are you no one, son of no one? Mm-hmm. You see, if you're a somebody, then that somebody is going to want to write poetry, or it's going to want to read poetry, or something else, and it will have intentions, and it will want to improve itself and want to create something for others to enjoy and... reflect back on the greatness of the poet and right all of that. So it's that you don't want to get caught in. Uh-huh. And that's why if, my recommendation would be read only Ramana's inner writings from the Guru Vachaka Kovai or the talks even, but you read a sentence, and basically in almost every sentence he's saying silencing the mind is the way. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to do. Mm-hmm. Okay, you don't need to write poetry. That will just get you back into concepts and into the I thought. Mm-hmm. If you really want to realize God, only silencing the mind will get you there, nothing else. And so that's what I would focus on. And, of course, yes, you'll find resistance from the ego, but this is the sadhana, is overcoming that resistance until that silence becomes bliss. And then it becomes effortless, and you don't want to interrupt it. And then, paradoxically, out of that bliss, in which there's no intention to write poetry, poems will start to come. Mm-hmm. From the silence, though, not from the desire to write something impressive or anything like that. It will then be the beloved writing through you as an instrument, not you doing anything, because that you will be gone. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to accomplish.
All right, that sounds beautiful. And so with the resistance, like you'd say, to just the practice is to sit with it and to overcome it and just keep practicing until it falls away.
It's atma-vichara. You watch, you observe it, and you say, who is it who is observing the ego in its resistances and, right, its chatter, etc.? Mm-hmm. But there's always a silent awareness behind that. And if you keep returning to that silent awareness, the interest in the mental chatter will fall away, and then the silence will reveal itself as bliss and light and joy and love and wisdom. It will all come. Mm-hmm. And then the silence will be your home, your abode. You won't want to ever leave it. Mm-hmm. And you will discover that you can stay in that inner silence in unity as the self while the body does its seva, and it will be able to do it without any resistances in its work and in its relationships, because they will all come out of that silence and peace and joy and love. And then there won't be any glitches and any negative projections and fault finding, and all of that will disappear, and everything will be a flow state, and the functioning of the body mind will go on flawlessly while the self continues shining and is never taken out of its turiya state, whether the body is awake or dreaming or in deep sleep. But the turiya will always be present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems like it all comes back to atma-vichara and staying
always
with that.
Always, that's all there is to do.
Mm. Haji, thank you.
Okay, well, our class is nearly over. So the last item on my agenda is to offer a farewell to Lucas, who will be leaving the ashram tomorrow. And maybe we can bring a chair up and give Lucas an opportunity to say a last farewell to the Sangha, share whatever you would like.
Well, more than anything, I'd like to share a lot of gratitude, infinite gratitude for everyone here and the energy field that we've all come together to create. And gratitude for the opportunity to be of service to the spiritual teacher that touched my heart and really opened up a lot of love even before I came to the ashram and allowed me to greatly increase my intelligence and my wisdom and to learn so quickly and be able to internalize all the wisdom from the teachings and from within my own heart. And I noticed quickly those 6 months before coming to the ashram, so many aspects of my life improving and enhancing my relationships with my family and with my friends and with myself, with God, with life, with death. So my greatest inspiration in coming to the ashram was to be of service and to offer myself of my heart and soul to the spiritual teacher, to Shunyamurti, and to the community that has come together to bring this awesome energy and wisdom and emanate it out to the world. So it's been a great honor and a privilege and a pleasure. And I'd like to also mention and have gratitude for all those beings that have passed through the ashram that are not with us tonight while I was here, all the Sevadaris and all the Shakti Saturation Month guests and all the spiritual connections and friendships that I was able to make in my time here. And yeah, how much of a blessing it has been. I can honestly say that the past 8 months in Sat Yoga has been the greatest gift of my life in this lifetime, and that I always keep this energy and love and wisdom in my heart and in remembrance of everything that I've learned. And I'd like to share how great I've been feeling lately as well in the last weeks and the last months. I feel like a few years ago now, maybe around 4 years ago, by the time I was turning 18, I sort of started my spiritual journey, even very unconsciously at the time, and the snowball kept rolling and getting bigger, and I feel like I planted a lot of seeds a few years ago, and they're finally coming to blossom now. So I'm leaving with a lot of happiness and a lot of joy in my heart, and I've been able to drop so many belief systems and so many concepts since I've been here in the last 8 months, and many concepts that were useful concepts and spiritual concepts and understandings that served me, and they've naturally fallen off, many of them. And with a lot of love and a lot of gratitude and joy and fearlessness, I'm going into the unknown. I have no idea really what I'll be doing a week from now or where exactly I'll be. And yeah, I'd just like to share that all of you have had a great part in contributing to this courage and fearlessness that I feel into facing the unknown now, and that all of you have been my teacher in some way or another, and that I'll remember all of you and have great gratitude for every moment. So thank you all very much.
Okay, thank you, Lucas. Blessings on your path wherever you go. I'm sure after the class many people will come up to you and give you blessings individually. So it's been a great joy, and you've been an excellent Sevadari, and we'll be glad to give you, you know, letters of recommendation and whatever help we can give you in your next steps. And I really have a great love for you and a great appreciation for how much you have grown while you've been here, and how much you have contributed to the ashram. So thank you.
Thank you, Shunya.
I love you. And one last thing I want to mention, a lot of gratitude for all the workers here that I've had the privilege to work together with, and who have also welcomed me like family, as all of you have, and have made great spiritual connections and friendships with them, even with Brian and his family welcoming me to his home for a few nights. And I want to really acknowledge a lot of gratitude for the heavy-duty work that our workers do, and that it was a privilege to work alongside them and to learn a lot of Spanish and be able to contribute in that way. And, yeah, in the greenhouse as well, a lot of gratitude for Hanuman and for Yogi Raj for bringing me on and welcoming me to the team. So mostly gratitude. So thank you all.
Thank you. Okay, beautiful. So, this Saturday is Mahashivaratri, and from my perspective, this is the high holy day of Sat Yoga, because it is the holiday that prefigures the arrival of Shiva in the night of time, and we are in that night, and the arrival is happening. And so I hope that we will all use this week to really empty out of all ego and be receptive to what Shiva would like to give us and to fill us with on this holiday, because it is not a coincidence or an accident that it is happening now, and that it is as central a core of the entire practice and being of the entire project of yoga since thousands of years. It has, yoga began with the teachings of Shiva, and it ends with the coming of Shiva and the singularity that then brings about the end of one world and the birth of a new one. And we are, our function as yogis is to be to be elements of that process by going through our own microcosmic death and rebirth and vibrating with that same frequency of Shiva's presence, so that the entire planetary morphic field is filled with that supreme light and love and purity and unity, and so that how the ending will actually be subjectively experienced by whoever is attuned to that vibration will be blissful. There won't be any suffering. There won't be any gnashing of teeth or sense of being in a hell realm or any of that. There will be the blissful light that will wash away all of the apparent destructive aspects of what seems to be happening, and the eternal presence of God and the goodness of God and the beauty and the bliss will be overriding and overwhelming, and will eliminate any other concerns or thoughts or emotions. And so we want to be completely and accurately attuned to that supreme presence. And that is salvation and Jivan Mukti. And if we are in that state, then we will indeed be graced with graduation from the wheel of birth and death, and be able to function for God at a higher level, that for the ego may be unimaginable, but which will call us to an entirely new horizon of the real that we can only know once we have passed beyond this one. So I hope everyone will give yourself the opportunity to make that crossing into the infinite nature of your own being and leave behind the finite, to know the deepest secrets and the mysteries of God, not of evil, but of God and total goodness. So blessings on that internal transformation in which you recognize Shivoham. Shiva is I, is the self, and make that a truth that is directly realized. So blessings to all. Namaste. Namaste.